You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
It's time for our weekly catch-up with the National Party.
Welcome back to The Wire. This week in our weekly catch-up with the National Party is the first of three interviews to discuss the impact and response to the Auckland anniversary and Cyclone Gabrielle floods last year. The government is overhauling the current emergency management system based on feedback from those affected most severely by flood damage. In our weekly catch-up with the National Party, I speak to MP Katie Nimmin about the new emergency management system and about the government's commitment to emissions reduction as extreme weather events become more common. So I wanted to start off with the government looking at the overhaul of the emergency management system. How did this overhaul, I guess, come about?
Oh, look, it's all really resulted in the impact and effects of Cyclone Gabrielle, which is obviously very close and important to me, given I am a Hawke's Bay girl and dealt very closely with this situation. Look, if you ask anyone in Hawke's Bay, they say that the emergency management system as it isn't fit for purpose, and that was really highlighted in the aftermath of Cyclone Gabrielle. And look, the emergency management law was already under review, and it was actually in front of the Select Committee when we came into government. And so that was pulled away for the Minister to do further work. And now we've got a timeline to see that back going through its process early next year, which is really exciting. But look, you know, a good little example is that we don't even have one communication system that's all connected. And that proves really difficult in terms of managing communications after a disaster. So these are the little things, and then some of the big things is how we empower the Defence Force, you know, how we stand up communities and what we prepare for, and some of the emergency sort of bylaws that we had to pass after the cyclone as an example. Some of these things we need to better enable so that no one has to wait to you know, dig a hole in the ground if they need to. So look, it's a very long process, I suppose, but it's going to be something that will be very well informed.
And one of the main complaints we've been hearing from people affected by the cyclone is the sort of lack of urgency, I guess, from local and central government regarding the response there. Do we think this is something that will be addressed in this overhaul?
Oh, look, absolutely. So we had the Mike Bush report and the Jerry Matapurai report. And in particular, the 14 recommendations that came from that are what are all going to be considered and developed in this legislation change. And so, look, the people have really been listened to. And so, obviously, those complaints and issues in terms of the sense of urgency, the communication, the access to information, the connection to communities, all of that is really important. And so all of that will be addressed in some way or another.
There's been some hints here and there that the government doesn't quite know the potential cost of these changes, or we don't have a budget just yet. Is this something we should be concerned about?
Oh, look, I think it's going to be more of an enabling legislation change, and of course there'll always be costs. You know, moving to a new comms system, for example, a good example of that might be the, I think, DW4 it's called. You know, there will be a cost to doing something like that, but the cost of not doing it is far greater. I don't have a number figure for it, but some of the costs will be marginal, some might be on a larger scale, but, you know, there are things that we can have supported by private sector. There's an amazing business in my area that have been putting containers full of emergency preparedness and sort of disaster response kit into small communities. And, hey, they cost money, but actually a lot of them being supported by community funds, by local business partners. And so there are ways that we can leverage partnerships there. But we've got to have a whole-of-society approach to emergency management, and so there will be some decisions made and some changes made that are more of an enablement rather than a cost or something with a dollar figure on it.
So with the cost there, you know, this government has been talking previously about cost-cutting measures and reducing public spending. Can we expect that cost to have any impact at all on how the government carries out these recommendations? Or
it's probably too early for me to make a comment on that. That's all work that Minister Mitchell's doing at the moment, and he'll provide more detail on the program early next year. But, you know, there is a cost to the system that we have at the moment. You know, NEMA are a government agency, civil defence officers within each region, and then, of course, every council, every local territorial authority has got their own civil defence program as well. And so it's how we can better utilise those services. And then, of course, adding to that, the Defence Force. They were a huge asset and arguably not utilised well enough after Cyclone Gabrielle. You know, these are costs we already incur, and it's how we better utilise them. And it's more about the system and the structure. And these are the things that we'll be looking at, no doubt.
And when we're looking at adverse weather events like Cyclone Gabrielle and other things we've been seeing internationally as the result of the climate crisis, what are the efforts, switching track a little bit here, that the government are taking to reduce our emissions and make good on our targets there?
Yeah, well, look, our emissions reduction plan shows the government can both grow the economy and deliver our climate change commitments. And I think that's something that, you know, for some people that have perhaps a different persuasion just don't believe can go hand in hand. And we believe strongly that they can. So there's a huge amount of work that we've got to do to reduce emissions and deliver on climate change. But, you know, we're committed to meeting the emission budgets and climate change targets. And so we've got a five-point strategy to do that. And I think, you know, it is hard to sell to people that think that the only way to do it is to, you know, slow progress and not build roads and not build housing developments. And these things are all part of the sort of the grand scheme, and we think we can do those hand in hand.
If we're looking at some of the projects that have come out with the fast track approval bill when the list came out a couple of weeks ago, we saw some mining projects, some clean energy projects there. And we've also seen the government overturn the ban on oil and gas exploration. They seem to be running, I guess, in two different tracks there. How should we look at that?
Yeah, well, look, as obviously is the case, a key part of our approach is working with the agriculture sector, transportation, energy, waste sectors, not against them, because we want people to reduce their emissions. So that's part of it. When it comes to the banning of oil and gas, look, the decision that was made in 2018 didn't think about the long-term ramifications. At that time, and in the years following, we have not had the consenting practices enabled to help these green energy products and producers to be ready for the dip that we have when we get rid of the energy suppliers that are oil and gas based. And so, look, the thing that might have been right to do at the time was, you know, banning it on a long-term horizon that we then worked towards, and that didn't happen. And unfortunately, what we got is, you know, business closures like WPI and Ruapehu, and, you know, that's all down to $800 per megawatt prices. You know, and so, but we just can't have that. It's not sustainable. So we've got to be realistic. It's not the thing we want to put all our eggs in the basket of. Of course, clean energy is our priority, and you've seen that by the fact that more of the projects were wind farms, solar farms, and hydro reconsenting and consenting than is mining. And so I think that's a really important story to tell.
There's also some worries out there that at current pace we won't be able to reach our 2030 emissions targets, or that we might be leaving the next two governments under a lot of pressure to make some quick changes there. Do you think these concerns are well-founded?
Look, no, I don't, and I think it comes down to perception of approach. You know, like I always argue that, you know, we want to achieve the same thing, we just have different ways of going about it, and some people trust the process and some people need to be proven to believe it. And so, look, we're going to work really hard on that, and we believe that working with industry, not against it, is going to have us get there faster, and especially having a good, strong economy supports innovation, and we will see things grow as a result in terms of how we are reducing our footprint. And, you know, the horticulture industry in Hawke's Bay is a really great example, though. They're really ready to reduce their impact, but they need support with different approaches, whether it's through you know, gene technology and different import regulations. And so we've got to be supportive of the industries that are going to help us get there.
That was the National Party's Katie Nimmin speaking to me about overhauling the emergency management system and this government's efforts to reduce emissions.
That was our weekly chat with the National Party.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.